Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for a Tuesday, everybody, right here on Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook, and I suppose depending upon who you root for, it was either a very good weekend or it wasn't such a good weekend. I just told Gary that, frankly, I think this is just nature's way of evening things out because, you know, we've had it real good around here lately. Several latelys, in fact, I think, for the most part. And that goes, you know, Patriots, Red Sox, what have you. I think everybody's had it pretty good around here. And so when you get a stinker like that, although it's two times in the last three games now that you've had a stinker like this, which certainly bears another, you know, set of questions that will undoubtedly be approached here at some point, you have to wonder if there's not a bigger issue to tackle. Maybe that's part of what we should begin tackling today because the Patriots, I've let it kind of sit now for about, you know, a day and a half since everything was over, almost 2 days. I did my best, even though yesterday was the Columbus Day holiday, I did my best to stay away from the radio and some of the talk shows and some of the emotional reactions after the loss on Sunday night. And the reason is because I wanted to, you know, it's kind of like, you know, getting an email that makes you angry and you just immediately fire off an answer. And then maybe 15, 20 minutes later, you wish you hadn't done it because you've had a chance to let it sit and reflect a little bit. And you're like, you know, it wasn't quite as bad as I originally thought it was. You know, it's, you know, just sometimes you have to let maturity kind of set in a little bit. So with that in mind, I decided, you know what, I'm going to try to stay away from most everything. I didn't watch any of the NFL highlight shows at all after that game was over on Sunday night. Didn't watch anything yesterday with the exception of the Red Sox getting blown out. I wanted a chance to be able to talk with you today from a less emotional standpoint, because I will admit, while watching the game Sunday night, I was angry, I was confused, I was upset, I was doubting, I was second-guessing, I was like, what the hell is this? Just like I'm sure you were. And I said, you know what, that's not right. I gotta take a step back a little bit, because let's see if we can make this make sense. And I think the general consensus that I've been able to come up with in my own mind after kind of paying attention now to what others are saying, at least since about this time yesterday, it's still a team that I think the general perception is the Patriots are a team that largely has everything in place with the exception of one guy. And I think that's the misconception about the Patriots. I think the Patriots are now realizing, for instance, how much they really miss a guy like Asante Samuel in the defensive backfield. I think, for instance, they're also learning that one or two, perhaps, of the linebackers, and I'm not going to name names, I'll let you come up with your own combinations, have seen better days. And maybe one or two others are not living up to expectations. They're not. They may be pulling their own weight. But because they're not helping the others, the entire unit suffers by comparison, if that makes any sense. I think the defensive line is underperforming with one exception, based on what I've seen, at least over the last two or three weeks. So right there, you're looking at the entire defensive unit. That ought to be a pretty good indicator as to why this team gave up 30 points the other night. Offensively speaking, I think we all realize that, yes, it is a different team without, you know who, a quarterback. But the problems offensively go deeper than just that. And again, the misconception of the Patriots is, oh, it's the same team. They just don't have Tom Brady. Well, Tom Brady doesn't tackle. Tom Brady doesn't block. Never did. may never ever do it again, that's for sure. And he doesn't catch passes. On the offensive side of the ball, sure. If you're going to miss a certain Hall of Famer, quite frankly, you're going to suffer a little bit by comparison. And we've taken great pains over the last few weeks since the season opener occurred to explain, you know, hey, Matt Cassel's going through the same type of thing that Tom went through when he took the job over from Drew Bledsoe, for the most part. And comparatively speaking, and we've done some of the comparisons, and you probably read them online or seen them on TV or read them in a newspaper, fact is his numbers, at least up until a week or two ago, were very comparable, if not even slightly better than where Brady was at this same stage of his career back in 2001. The problem is that you've got a problem in the offensive backfield, and I think we all know where that is. He didn't even suit up. You also had a little bit more of an injury problem on Sunday night because Lamont Jordan also didn't suit up. Freudian slip there. The offensive line, I don't even know where to start. But the one thing that I will start, don't get me wrong here, I love Dan Copen. He was a great kid while I was at BC calling their games several years ago when he was the starting center at Boston College. He was, you know, right place, right time, fit into the right mold. But he was abused by Jamal Williams. Abused. And on the goal line stand that completely turned the game around in the third quarter, as we all know, you know, Patriots, you know, down 17-3, knocking on the door, pull within a touchdown. It changes the entire face of the football game. He got abused. I haven't seen a center pancaked like that, maybe ever, in the NFL. You know, have you ever, when you're playing backyard football or pickup football, and you ever play with a rule, and I may be speaking to Southerners primarily here, because we used to play with, you know, the DC rule when you're playing touch football, no DCing. Anybody know what DCing is? No ducking the center. That means basically shoving the center's face down into the ground after he snaps the football because he's not looking at you. That's exactly what Jamal Williams did the other night. He ducked the center. He ducked the center on Dan Copen and blew that play up. And it's still amazing to me how a team in the NFL has first and goal at the one and cannot get a yard. It just blows me away. I don't care how good. I don't care if the other team has 11 Sean Merrimans. You should be able to pick up a yard. Quarterback sneak, a yard. Come on. So you have to throw the offensive line under the bus, too. You got to throw everybody under the bus. I realize that, you know, they were playing with the guy Lavore on one of the tackle spots because Kazier went down. I'm sorry, and it has nothing to do with the fact that he went to A&M. I'm not a Billy Yates fan. I don't think he has. I really believe, and I've said this before on this show this year, and those of you who have listened to this show at all before, you know that I've made this this point. They missed the athleticism of Stephen Neal a great deal. He was one of those glue guys that kind of helped keep that unit together, and his athleticism paid off for a lot of guys. He helped make other guys look good now that he's, you know, finally learned how to play football from being a wrestler. He's one of the true great stories, I think, that, you know, has come across, you know, the New England Patriots way in the last several years based on his background and his development. But the offensive line was horrific. And if you don't have an offensive line and you don't have running backs, I don't think you can expect a lot of your quarterback. And so I am not, in any stretch, laying this at Matt Cassel's feet. I'm not doing it. Now, granted, today is, you know, NFL trading deadline. 4 p.m. today. 4 p.m. Eastern time today is the trading deadline in the NFL. So we're an hour and 45 minutes away from that. And who knows if anybody will do anything. Who knows if the Patriots do anything? I have to admit that if the Patriots did what I wanted them to do, and I said this, what, 2, 3, 4 weeks ago maybe? I said, I think, you know, you need a little pick-me-up. I think you need a little jolt. I think you need a little electricity to go through the veins of everybody in Foxborough, and that includes the guys down the hallway in the locker room. I think maybe you either cut somebody or you pick somebody up. I said that a month ago. I would love to see them still go out and pick up Jeff Garcia, although he's playing again now for Tampa Bay. I do know that I heard a radio report early this morning that said Detroit was going to release John Kitna if he was not traded for by 4 p.m. I don't know. Do you still go get John Kitna? What do you think of John Kitna? And it doesn't do much for me. Maybe it does more for you. My first question to you today, kids, webradio@patriots.com, okay? First question to you is, this is the trading deadline at the NFL at 4 p.m. Eastern time today. If there was one player that you could trade for that you think would make a difference right now in this football team?
Dan Klecko.
Okay, maybe so. We know who Gary would pick. If there is one player somewhere in the NFL that you think would make a difference, who is it? Now, if you want to go pie in the sky, that's fine, okay? I think you have to realize that, you know, there are certain, you know, cost parameters. Let's talk about players that would be gettable. Gettable. Maybe you're not initiated enough. Maybe you don't know of a guy's, you know, contractual situation, what have you. And that's fine, which is why I'm allowing you to have the pie in the sky. You know, hey, let's go get Peyton Manning. You know, okay, fine. That's great. Although I'm not even sure that would do any good. I think the Patriots need to look elsewhere. I think they need to look elsewhere. Like I said a couple of moments ago, Matt Cassel was not the problem, by my estimation, on Sunday night. Far from it. Too many other problems reared their ugly heads on Sunday night for me to even begin thinking about quarterback. Now, again, if they went out and made a deal like a, you know, Garcia or something like that, well, then sure, that would put a little jolt of electricity in there. But I think that they would be, I think they'd be attacking the wrong problem. Now, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I wouldn't have thought so. Now, I think so. It's a change. It's a work in progress here. And there is a lot, an awful lot of work to be done. So, all right, pie in the sky, shoot for one player that you think could, or in your estimation, would make a difference on this Patriots roster right now. If you could go out and get him, who would you get? Webradio@patriots.com. Telephone number is 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. Obviously, this being Tuesday, it's also a nitpick Tuesday, as we normally do here inside the playbook. So many nits to pick, I don't even know where to start, but I have already touched on the obvious ones from Sunday night's 30-10 debacle at the hands of the Chargers. I did say that San Diego would win the game, didn't I, last week? I believe I did. I just didn't think it would turn out exactly the way that it did. Not even close. I thought the Patriots at least make a game of it. And they had. They had a game of it. They still had a game of it up until, you know, the 98-yard drive went against them. And by the way, talk about an ignominious slap in the face. Talk about the ultimate insult. Adding insult to injury is you get stuffed at the 1 or the 2-yard line, and then the team rams it down your throat the other way for 98 yards. I mean, how incredibly bad is that? That is the equivalent of rubbing salt into an open wound. I don't know how the Patriots defensively allow that to happen. Just like offensively, I don't know how they kept from getting 1 yard, but allowing the team to go 98 the other way after you come up short, I'm still at a loss for words. It was a complete and utter meltdown, breakdown, failure. And now we've seen it 2 of the last 3 games they have played when you throw in the Miami debacle. Tells me that if this team were playing any tougher a schedule that they have left ahead of them, there's no way that this is a playoff team the way that they're currently the way that they currently consist. And yet we didn't really notice. This is the thing I think that's most troubling here, guys. We didn't really notice a lot of the flaws in this team until Brady went down. And just now we're beginning to understand. You know what? Where would we be if we had Brady? Would we be 4-1? Would we be 5-0? After what I saw on Sunday night, I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. The Patriots had a way with Brady at the helm. They had another way, if they got the lead, of causing people to give up, causing teams to basically say, well, we're not going to win this one. I truly believe that. It is all mental. So many things are equal physically in this league. Mentally is where you gain or lose your edge in the NFL. And the Patriots had the mental edge, and they've lost the key part to that, gaining that mental edge over the opponents in their quarterback. And so when they lose the quarterback, then people start thinking, hey, they don't have the quarterback. Maybe we got a shot. And so once you start believing, that mental thing kicks in. And then once you start proving and you start, you know, beating them up a little bit and pushing them around a little bit and shoving the ball down their throats for 98 yards, well, then, okay. All right. Now you got yourself your hands full. And you got a team that's willing to play with you on equal terms. When they had Brady, it was unequal terms. That's how much he meant to this franchise overall. Other guys have the ability, I believe, still on this roster to pick up the slack, and they're not doing it. Some of them can't stay healthy. Some of them, their best days have passed them by. So I think what we're seeing is that when Tom Brady went down, we're looking at a slow remaking of the New England Patriots beginning. The transformation has begun. It happened a little bit earlier than most of us thought it would. I mean, I think most of us felt like before the season started, I think most of us felt like, oh, you know, Brady's got, what, 3-5 more years easy? And so we've got 3-5 more years of living high on the hog around here and still being a legitimate AFC / Super Bowl contender, as long as he's a quarterback. I think what we're realizing here is that maybe this team wasn't quite as complete because, again, Brady has a way of making you gloss over the areas of your team that need attention. I'm willing to wager that both Scott Pioli and Bill Belichick are aware of and have been aware of for some time of the problems on this team. Certainly they addressed at least some of that in the offseason with Jerod Mayo and the linebacking core and trying to get repeated time in the preseason at least for Pierre Woods and Eric Alexander. You know, keeping Gary Guyton. I'm still not sure why we haven't seen Sean Crable. But, you know, perhaps in time. I think that if you're going to shake things up right now, I'd like to see him, you know, slice Delta O'Neal right off the roster after that unbelievable performance. I mean, let's name him Toast. Just remember Elvis Toast Patterson for the Giants a few years back? Delta Toast O'Neal, as far as I'm concerned. There's a reason why the winless Cincinnati Bengals let him go. There's a reason. I thought at the time when they picked him up, hey, you know, it couldn't hurt, right? Got some experience. He's a veteran. You know, we've had, you know, some decent history with picking up veterans from, you know, off the, you know, who've been discarded off the wayside, even off of bum teams before. Take a shot, right? Well, this one didn't work. Throw this one right up there with the Donald Hayes failed experiment, perhaps, at wide receiver. Yikes. Man, was he bad. I'm of the opinion now. And again, I'm just throwing out nitpicks left and right here, kids. So feel free to chime in with your biggest nitpick. There's a bunch of them here. Just pick and choose your favorite. Pick and choose your favorite nitpick. The one nitpick that you've got to just pick on today. It's like, you know, you got to pick at that scab, you know, you got to scratch the scab because it itches, right? Okay. So scratch the scab today. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you reach us here. You can do your nitpicking, but tell me what it is from Sunday night that really is still itching at you today. And I guess my biggest one is O'Neal and why he would even still be on the roster today. I am at the stage now where I've seen enough through a couple of weeks where I'm ready to throw my lot in with the young kids. Let's let Wheatley and or Wilhite have that slot and let's just let them learn on, you know, trial by fire. Because what difference is it going to make? Arguably, the schedule is easy enough for them to be able to at least be competitive. But when you go on the road and you play teams that are still pretty good, and I think we realize that San Diego is still a pretty good team. They're only 3-3 right now, but we talked about this all last week, for those of you that may have not been with us. We talked about it all last week with several people from San Diego. And they were all scratching their heads over why this team is, you know, up and down. And keep in mind now, the first two games they lost on flukes, lost in the final seconds. That team was not far away from being at least 4-1, maybe even 5-0, but certainly 4-1. And they played like a team that was 4-1 or 5-0 against the Patriots on Sunday. Patriots, I just don't think, had San Diego in their sights based on what I saw. It was lifeless. It was listless. I don't know if being on the West Coast last week had anything to do with that. You know, everybody says, no, that was the right move to make. Well, what's the proof? What's the proof? Show me. Not that I'm from Missouri or anything, but show me. They lost the game. I'd be convinced it was a good idea had the team at least been competitive and played with some desire and some fire. Nothing. Lifeless, listless, flat, terrible. Maybe they were too comfortable last week. Maybe they were too comfortable. Maybe they had too many creature comforts of home. Maybe they needed a little bi-coastal road trip just to wake them up a little bit and give them something to bitch about. Didn't work, did it? Nope. Bottom line, if this is a bottom line business, and I'm told all the time it is, nobody cares, just win. Well, they didn't win, did they? So it's time to reevaluate. From top to bottom, it's time to reevaluate everything. You can't talk out of both sides of your mouth. Time to reevaluate. Take it on a week-by-week basis, but time to reevaluate a lot of different things. I'd really like to see some of those young kids get the call at corner now. Help put Brandon Merriweather out there. Somebody, anybody. But O'Neal's got to go. Got to go. That's my biggest nitpick for the week. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482. All right, so I've given you a couple of things to chew on here early. Coming up in half an hour, we'll have, well, Brian Lowe is supposed to be here in the second hour of the program, at least scheduled to be here for Patriots Today and, of course, the Fantasy Lowdown. And Mark Johnson, who's the sports director at KOA Radio in Denver. He's been a friend of mine for several years covering the Denver Broncos. He's been a friend of mine since his days in the Big East Conference. Mark is going to join us to begin looking at next Monday night's game against the Denver Broncos. And, hey, we get a game back at Gillette Stadium. Okay? We get a game back at Gillette. It's Monday night football on ESPN, and the Denver Broncos come to town. So we'll begin talking about that with Mark Johnson in the second hour of the program today. In the meantime, there's plenty of time for you to contribute. Now, before we get to a break here and then we'll start getting to the emails, let me address my friend Strippers because I know that he was going to email today. And I saw the email and, you know, it's all in good fun. I think you realize that. He's the OU fan in the bunch here. And obviously there are many of you that know that I went to the University of Texas. So they have had this college football game for the ages on Saturday at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. It was, if you missed the game, do yourself a favor and go to YouTube. And even Strippers would have to admit this. Go to YouTube, or, you know, when it comes on ESPN Classic, which it eventually will, and it's already played a couple of times, you got to watch the clips from this game. It was a great college football game. And I'd say that even if Texas had lost. It was a great game. There was so much back and forth. There were so many big plays, so many individuals rising to the occasion that you just don't see out of college players. You just don't see it. But you saw it in that Texas-Oklahoma game. And Texas having won 45-35, that's why Texas is, you know, they jumped over Alabama and everybody else to number one in the nation this week. Oh, you did not slide far, did they, Strippers? Sends an email here. He says, Texas loses to Tech in Missouri, and OU slides into the Big 12 title game just like 2006. You know what? That could still very easily happen. Because Texas has Missouri this week, which I'm deathly afraid of, even though they get them in Austin. Then they got to play at Oklahoma State. They got to play at Texas Tech, and they got to play at Kansas. Holy cow. Those are their three road games. At Okie State, at Tech, and at Kansas. Home games, they have Missouri, Baylor, and A&M. That's what they have left. So you can see where they could lose more than just one. Oklahoma, I hate to inform you, Strippers, also has a fairly tough schedule. So, you know, missing the middle linebacker, you know, Ryan Reynolds, like you pointed out earlier, I don't know. I mean, you know, the same teams are going to exploit the same thing we saw on Saturday that Texas did. So, you know, it's anybody's guess. Sure, they could slide into it. And Texas could also win the rest of their games and not have any competition to get into the BCS title game if they win them all. You'd have to say that if Texas gets through this schedule undefeated, Strippers, that is one of the best all-time regular seasons based on the teams that they've played and beaten, if they are able to get through. My own personal estimation is that they won't do it. How's that for trying to be impartial? You know, cut me, I bleed orange, all right? But I'm trying to look at it objectively. I don't think they get through this schedule without a loss. But you got to understand, OU is basically two games behind Texas. Texas would have to lose twice, and OU would have to win the rest. And I don't even think that's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen with that South Division of the Big 12, but the South Division of the Big 12 has four teams ranked out of six. Six teams in the South Division of the Big 12. Four teams are ranked in the top 11. No, 10. Yeah. Texas, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State. Top 10. How about that? One division of one league. Four teams in the top 10. I mean, that's a slam dunk. Slam dunk. Big 12, easily, right now, the best conference in America. Easily. Not even close. Not even the high and mighty SEC can say the same. You can't. SEC is a great, great college football conference, and it really has been for a number of years. It is taking a back step, page here to the Big 12 this season anyway. So, Strippers, I'm happy to go back and forth with you on that. Because I know that you would have inundated me with emails, ha, 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 had OU won the game. Fact is, they didn't. Texas has a deeper team, and they have a little bit better team, top to bottom. That's why they won. All right, so there you go. Now you can go cry in your, you know. By the way, you got to get a mascot. What's a Sooner? I know that I've probably know that from somewhere deep in my, you know, memory bank. I probably repressed the memory. What the hell is a Sooner? Did you see the goofy-ass hat that Lee Corso put on his head, you know, when he picked Oklahoma to win the game, college
hey,
game
Whitey, day? Where's your hat?
Yeah. I mean, come on. Put a wagon on your head, please. What's a Sooner? Sooner be dead than red. That's all I know. Webradio at patriots.com. 508-543-7482. That's our telephone number. Okay, need a nitpick from Sunday. Today's Nitpick Tuesday. What's the one that really sticks in your craw from Sunday night's debacle against the Chargers? We'll try to get that out of the way here in the opening the latter part of this half hour, and then we start looking ahead towards Denver in hour number two with Mark Johnson from KOA Radio in Denver, Colorado. And because there's really no sense in dwelling on the negative for the most part, right? And it's the NFL trading deadline at 4 p.m. Eastern time today. Pick one player that you think would be a difference maker, a real difference maker on this Patriots team. If you could get him, who would it be and why? Webradio at patriots.com, and we'll have an explanation of what exactly a Sooner is, in case Strippers doesn't know this. Coming up inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Super League championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's our telephone number as we continue Inside Patriots Playbook here on patriots.com radio. Tim Graham is the AFC blogger, AFC East blogger for ESPN.com. I'm sure many of you are familiar with some of the things that he does. And he's got up on his blog, actually it was from, the original post was from yesterday. But he says, it's talking about the Patriots' offense straining. The Patriots were bad, obviously, on third down. They converted all five of their third downs when they had four or fewer yards to gain. But they failed on all nine of their attempts against the Chargers of more than 4 yards. They only converted one third down with a pass. One. So he says, why did Patriots receiver Randy Moss after the game tell a radio reporter to get the bleep out of his face? Probably because of the 10 times Matt Castle threw to Moss, only three were completions and they went for 26 yards. See, even Randy Moss isn't blameless for Sunday night. Yes, the defensive backs covered him well. Probably did as good a job of handling him one-on-one as anybody I've seen in recent memory. They did a good job. Quentin Jammer did a very good job on him. Hard to say, hard to believe, it's true. Randy couldn't catch the ball either. Randy also needs to own up to that. Tim also blogs, then there was the New England chance to draw within a touchdown on the first series of the third quarter. Castle needed 8 plays to drive the Patriots into a first and goal situation from the one. Automatic, right? Check this. Castle incompletion. Sammy Morris run for no gain. That was the play in which Jamal Williams just blew up Dan Copen at center. Castle incompletion. Castle sacked. The Elias Sports Bureau, these, of course, are the stat gods of America. The Elias Sports Bureau reports the Patriots reached the one-yard line and failed to score for the first time since their 2003 season opener. Anybody else realize that? Pretty brutal. Pretty brutal. Fact is, though, is the third down conversions, as Tim Graham pointed out, third down conversions hurt. And I don't know if it's so much the play call as it is the execution. Could also be the play call. I mean, quite frankly, it seemed as if it was somewhat predictable, knowing what was coming. Yes, you didn't have some of the weapons that you normally would have. Fact is, though, that the guys you do have to find a way to make plays. Moss didn't make any plays. And by the way, do we still have a tight end on this roster? Now that I'm just kind of nitpicking in general here. Do we still have a tight end? Did we throw to the ball to a tight end more than one time on Sunday night? I don't think so. We certainly didn't see the tight end on that third down on the goal line because Ben Watson was wide open. And Matt never looked his direction. Never looked his direction. If you're going to have nitpick on Castle, that's the only thing I can really find at fault because there was so much else going down around him. That's really the only thing I can find at fault with Castle on Sunday was he never looked Watson's direction. He was quiet. He was wide open on the left side. Never looked there. And that may not have been the third down. That may have been the fourth down play in which he was sacked, I think. I think it was the fourth down play. Anyway. Fact is that it was a complete and abysmal total team failure, as Tim Graham points out. A lot of reasons. And I think you have to not only examine, you know, the execution of the plays, but the plays themselves. Now, I'm not, you know, necessarily dragging Josh McDaniel into the morass here, but let's face it. If it's not working, you got to figure out something else to do. And if you're not able to do that something else because your personnel is limited, well, then obviously you're just screwed, right? You're screwed. So then you got to figure out a way to be effective with what you do have. Maybe the only way you can be effective is by having a more mobile quarterback, and maybe you got to go out and get one. I don't know. Again, I'm just wondering out loud here to nobody in particular and to everybody in particular about potential changes. Sooners, here you go. This is for you, strippers. The term Sooners, used to describe settlers who entered the unassigned lands located in the current state of Oklahoma before President Grover Cleveland officially proclaimed them open to settlement with the Indian Appropriations Act of 1889. The name is derived from the Sooner Clause of the Indian Appropriation Act, which stated that no one should be allowed to enter and occupy the land prior to the opening time, and that such people would be denied rights to illegally claim land. So a Sooner is someone who shouldn't be where they ended up. A Sooner is somebody who...
In the loss column?
Yeah, well, that too. That too. Hey, they got a good football team. I'll grant you that. Oklahoma's a very good football team. Easy to pick on, though, because of, you know, people like strippers. A Sooner is someone who's there where they are illegally. Gosh, that's something you can really get behind, can't you? That's something you can really root for. Hey, go Sooners. Go, you illegal aliens, because that's what you are. A Sooner was an 1880s version of an illegal alien. How about that? You like that? That's a Sooner. Okay. Yeah. Gary's telling me things privately that I wish I could share, but I'm not going to because I'm not going to get into a political debate here. I don't think this is the forum. Although we could, but no, we're not going to do that. So anyway, good stuff. Very good stuff. Hey, listen, I got to tell you, strippers, because I know you listen quite often. I have a friend of mine who I worked with in TV in San Antonio a number of years ago who was I went to Texas and he went to OU as well. He's an Oklahoma ex. Very good guy. Still, I believe, in the media business in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And we used to go back and forth all the time on things like this. It was a lot of fun to go back and forth with him on it, you know. And I think it's because we had a mutual respect for each other's football programs, which, of course, you know, they're storied football programs. And, yeah, Oklahoma's had their, you know, had some advantages in the last decade or so for the most part, although Texas has now won 3 out of the last 4 by my math. So careful what you wish for. Another crack at Texas. You might get it, although you're not going to get it this year. See, that's the other thing. Why Texas and OU in the same division? That stinks. That stinks. They should be playing for the Big 12 championship, not, you know, in addition to what they do, obviously, in the Cotton Bowl on the second Saturday of every October, which is one of the great traditions in college football. One of the great traditions in college football is Texas and Oklahoma meeting the Cotton Bowl, the Texas State Fair, second Saturday every October. I hope that never goes away. I hope you got a chance to see some of the game because it was an outstanding football game, no matter the level. All right, let's get some emails in here. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number if you hear something or, you know, you want to chime in on by via email or telephone. And, again, Brian Lowe scheduled in the next hour. Also, we have Mark Johnson from KOA Radio in Denver coming up to start talking about the Broncos in today's program. This one comes from Thomas in Michigan. It says, on the first long pass down the sideline from Castle to Moss, isn't it the job of Randy to come back to the ball and even go up to the highest point to out-jump the cornerback, not slow down to a jogging pace, and just simply stick his hands out hoping that the ball lands in them? That's a good question, Thomas. The Chargers receivers seemingly had no problem doing this even when the passes weren't the best, as Rivers knew his guys would go up for the ball. Is there a shortage of tall secondary players in the league and coming out of the draft too? Yeah, I know. It seems like we had, you know, it seems like we had Lilliputians back there against their wide receivers, didn't it? Either that, or our guys have no hops whatsoever, none, zero. I feel the same pain. Vincent Jackson certainly looked like he was willing to come back to the ball, didn't he? Although a couple occasions he didn't have to, but still, it looked like he was certainly willing to do that. We didn't have anybody that would do that. Todd says, everyone needs to calm down. Castle is about fourth on my list of concerns about this team. I agree with you, Todd. I totally agree with you. Castle is not at the top of my concern list right now with the Patriots. He was not the reason this team got beat up and pushed around and slam danced on Sunday night. Todd says, San Diego on the road was going to be a hard game to win with or without Tom Brady. That D has been the big disappointment. No pass rush. Poor corner play. They're the big problem. This has always been a bend but don't break defense. This year it's been a bend then break defense. Let's just hope that Bill will straighten things out. Yeah. Yeah. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. It is, you know, it's been bend but don't break. This year it's bend and then break. We had no pass rush whatsoever on Phillip Rivers. You noticed how much quicker, again, if you're going to be nitpicky here, which this is what we do on Tuesdays, if you're going to be nitpicky, Castle held onto the ball way too long. Way too long. Noticed Rivers got rid of the football in a split second because he knew where his receivers are going to be. And his receivers, when the ball was off the mark, as we've already had an emailer suggest, his receivers knew to come back for the ball. That's what quarterbacks and receivers who know each other, that's what they do. And I would argue that the Patriots still don't have that kind of chemistry between Castle and Moss or Welker or Watson or Gaffney or anybody. They don't have that yet. And we saw that painstakingly. We had to go through that and witness that on Sunday night. It's still not there. No matter how much they practice, no matter how much they go back and forth, and work together, it's still not there. San Diego had it. So because of that, because of Rivers getting rid of the football as quickly as he did, you had to find a way to put pressure on him. They never did. I don't know if that means you blitz the outside backer, you change up. I don't know what it means. Maybe they were too afraid of LaDainian Tomlinson gouging them. That's the one thing the Patriots actually did fairly well, with the exception, I think, of one run. They actually bottled up Tomlinson pretty well, you know, hurt big toe or no hurt big toe that he had, allegedly. You have to find a way to put some heat on the quarterback. God almighty, how many times do we have to say that? Did we not learn that last February? That when you put heat on the quarterback, good things usually happen for your defense? Did this team not learn that? See, I'm beginning to think that this team is stubborn enough defensively, too stubborn defensively, to think that just the front four or three is good enough to put pressure on an NFL quarterback. And I'm here to tell you now, that's not working. It doesn't work. Your front three, they got two gap responsibilities, okay? They're chewing up space for the linebackers to make plays, and the linebackers are not making plays. So if you're going to ask your defense then to rush, if you're going to ask your defense to get into the opposing team's offensive backfield, then by golly, you've got to be able to find a way for them to do that. That means you're going to rush more than three. You'd better rush at least four, if not more. You better find an odd corner blitz, because, hell, they can't cover anybody, so why the hell not blitz the quarterback? And take your chances with the safety. The defense's inability to adjust when it was clear they were getting no pressure on Rivers was also a great conundrum from Sunday night. I'm scratching my head, trying to figure that out. Why are they not adjusting here? What am I missing? I realize that a lot of the coaches down the hallway think that this is rocket science and that you and I can't understand it. But I've been around this game for 30 years. I picked up a little bit here and there. There's a way to adjust. Try something. Especially if your linebacker, I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe they felt like the linebackers couldn't cover. And if the linebackers can't cover, then why the hell are they in there? Get somebody in there that can do the job. Take a chance on Pierre Woods or Eric Alexander or Gary Guyton or somebody. Get them in there and let them do the job. I'm not necessarily picking on one person or even two people here. I'm just kind of spouting out loud. That's what nitpicking is. But there are a lot of things that you can look at. Todd is dead on with his email here. Andy in Sioux City, Iowa says, great job on the West Coast covering the games. I felt like Matt Castle took a step back in the Chargers game, missing receivers and not reading defenses real well. Denver will be a big game. We need to win this one. I have a feeling Cutler is going to cut us apart. We're looking more and more like an 8-8 team if we're lucky. Well, I don't know that Matt Castle took a step back. Yeah, he missed some receivers. I just don't think he checked off real well, and he still doesn't do it real well, and maybe that just comes with a confidence factor. Reading defenses real well? Well, it's possible. That's part of it. You know, we were criticizing him in the early going for checking down too often and not, you know, trying to find the primary receiver. It looked like the other night he was trying to go primary as his only option. On a couple of occasions, and when he did check down, it got a yard or two. That was about it. It was too late. The decision-making process has to be quicker. There has to be a quicker release for Castle. That's the biggest difference I've noticed between him and anybody he goes up against, the opposing quarterback. Saw it, you know, in Phillip Rivers. Great release of the football. Quick release. Castle's got to work on that. You know, Denver's a big game. There's no doubt about it. Patriots do need to win it. Denver, though, is a Jekyll and Hyde team. Denver is all offense, no defense. You know, so the Patriots are probably going to end up having to score. And I thought, you know, they would have to score 25-plus, maybe, you know, to 30 to beat San Diego. And as it turns out, yeah, 30 would have gotten them a tie. I think they're going to have to score 30 again Monday night to beat Denver. Because Denver's going to be right there with, you know, 28 to 31 of their own, because the offense is pretty good and their defense has got problems. So this has a tendency to be a great game for television. Back and forth, shootout, offense, teams moving up and down the field. Has tendency, it really does. It has the makings of a great offensive shootout. Maybe it's one of those games where you figure like, all right, you know what, we better score the last time we have the ball. I mean, that's the way that I'd be approaching, you know, next Monday. We got to figure out a way to put points on the board and outscore Denver, because we're not stopping anybody. Not stopping anybody. Todd sends another note. He says, Lito Shepard, we really need a pass rush, but you don't get those guys at the trading deadline. Oh, in terms of, yeah, player that you think that could make a difference? Yeah. Lito Shepard would certainly be one of those. And frankly, that would be my preference. I'd love to find somebody who would be not even a shutdown corner. I'd like to find somebody who could defend the corner. Frankly, if I could have one player on this team that I think would make a difference right now, I'd go back and get Asante Samuel. You know, I didn't think that we'd miss him near as much as we are missing him. Good player, not great player, good player. I certainly don't blame the Patriots for not signing him just because of the money he commanded. But now that he's gone, I think we realize how much we missed him and how much we do miss him now and how much of a difference he could make on this current Patriots team if he were still here. Make a big difference. So we're going to go through some growing pains now until we can, you know, bring some of the younger kids up to speed. Lito Shepard. That's a good choice, Todd. Good choice. Andy sends him another note back. He says, Rook, I know he's older, but he sure knows the defense. Sign him. Oh, Ty Law in his subject line. I watched the replay of Chargers-Patriots from January in the AFC Championship game, and it sure felt good watching Brady taking snaps instead of Castle. Yeah, well, can't do much about that, Andy. Sorry. Can't do anything about that. Sorry. Ty Law, I've wondered why that has never happened. Why has that never happened? Why has Ty Law and the Patriots never happened? I can only surmise that the Patriots have perhaps made inquiries, but that it's this is all in Ty's end.
That was totally taken out of context.
Maybe. Maybe. Fact is that, you know, I would think that if he wanted to be here, he might be here. But, you know, I guess we'd have to, somebody's going to have to ask Ty Law that question.
Hey, what's up, Bill? How you doing?
Yeah. I don't think he's had much of a chance to say that, to be honest with you. Let's see. Todd says, first-round pick plus first-round pick plus first-round pick, pro bowler plus first-round pick, rookie playing well, plus over-the-hill player, he's done, and plus high-priced free agent equals no pass rush. Yeah. Yeah, I think he's kind of singling out some folks on the defensive line, huh? Yeah. Well, that's a problem. And like I said, if you've got all these players who are first-round picks and or pro bowl players, and there's still no pass rush, then okay, where's the fault lie? Where does the fault lie? Is it in the schematics? Is it in the coaching? Is it in the game planning? It's probably a little of each. You know, I thought that this team would be a better team for having the experience of a Dom Capers with a secondary that we knew was going to be potentially a trouble spot, and yet the secondary is worse than I think anybody ever imagined it could be. And I'm not laying this on Coach Capers. I'm not laying this on Coach Pease as the defensive coordinator. I'm not laying it on anybody. I'm just saying that it is a total team effort, and the team is failing. We all know where the problems are. You can pick it out. I can pick it out. I know that they down the hallway can pick it out. So how best do you attack it? You know, you got to come up with something here. Otherwise, then you got to get somebody else in to come up with something. That's basically what it boils down to and what we'll probably be talking about for most of the rest of this season, especially if this season continues to go up and down like the stock market. Of course, largely it's been down, although we had the huge rally this on Friday, didn't we? Yeah, 900 and some odd points on, you know, so that's that part was okay. Or, I mean, Monday, yesterday. So, it's better. It's not great, but it's better. Okay, this one, I don't know who this is. You got to sign these things, kids. It says, we are not a smash-mouth team. We do not have smash-mouth personnel. We have a quarterback with no experience. Why are we not capable of playing to our strengths? Randy Moss is our best playmaker. We all read and hear about being worried about his attitude and taking plays off or him or just going through the motions. He's 6'4 and has great hands. Wouldn't a few red zone TD catches or at least opportunities be good for everyone? Can't argue with that point. We didn't see one fade to Moss in the end zone, did we? Maybe Castle doesn't throw that pass. Brady and Belichick have stated that he is the smartest wide receiver they have played with. Doesn't that sound like an advantage for the Pats? And we don't even try this. Also, BB has stated that the reason they drafted Castle is due to his athleticism. If this is true, why would we not spread things out at the goal line and give him a true run-pass option? We love draw plays. Why not a quarterback draw? Matt's accuracy is questionable, and his decision-making is slow, but he is not the main problem. And Bill We Trust doesn't seem to ring as true anymore. We need to shake things up and give the team a chance to excel. That's an excellent email. That's an excellent, excellent email. Chelmke is the name on the address. I won't read the whole address, but sign it next time. Give yourself some credit. You did a good job with it. I could not agree more. The idea here is you got to play to a guy's strengths. And so if he's got some athleticism, then why don't you spread it out and go three or four wide at the one-yard line, run him out of the shotgun, and let him have a run-pass option? Sounds good to me. Throw one to Moss. Make him go up and get it. You got some athleticism? Fine. Go get it, big fella. Here you go. Or at the very least, let Kevin Faulk circle out of the backfield, curl over the middle, grab it in the end zone. And yet we're going to go two tight ends? I don't get it. And our offensive line gets blown off the ball by Jamal Williams. That was one of the most embarrassing plays I think I've seen in a long time. I feel for a guy like Copen. He doesn't deserve all the blame, but he was the focal point of the problem. Wow. Yeah, you got to come up. You got to create some things that gives your team a chance to compete. And frankly, the coaching and the calls were just as abysmal on Sunday night as the execution. Doesn't take much of a Patriots fan, I don't think, to really see that. Walter says, John, what do you think of John Madden's comments during the fourth quarter when he couldn't and then nothing? Walter, you got to write in the body of your email rather than
on the just mossed.
You got to write in the body of your email, pal, rather than on the subject line, because the subject line runs out of space, and so I don't get it. I don't know. Any idea what he's – oh, here it is. During the fourth quarter when he couldn't understand why there was no hurry-up offer?
Offense,
okay.
In the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Okay. Well, I didn't hear Madden's comments directly, but if Madden was criticizing why the Patriots weren't playing hurry up in the fourth quarter when it was still, you know, I guess a game at that stage, although I think the game was pretty much over, maybe they also decided that they needed to see some other things, that the game was lost. It'd be hard for me to believe that the Patriots actually gave up on anything. But it would appear that that would certainly be the case. Maybe they decided they need to see some certain things out of the offense, and the only way they were going to learn is if they saw it in game situations. Kind of like the whole preseason thing, you know? Not worried about the game or the score, worried about seeing certain things. Well, you know, now you got to play to win, okay? The games count now. Games count now. I don't know why you didn't go hurry up. I can't. I wish I could be a little bit more of a direct response because I had the sound down on the TV. I was watching it over at a friend's house, and we were all bitching and moaning about what we were watching, and so we didn't really have a whole lot of the sound up on Sunday night. So I can't directly comment on that, but if I'm close, I don't have an answer other than to say, you know, I was kind of scratching my head as well. Hey, it's not working here. Why not do a little no huddle? Why not a little hurry up? Why not something to keep San Diego's defense back on its heels? Anything to get a half a step, a quarter of a step advantage over those defensive backs who looked like they looked like gloves on top of the Patriots receivers. That's how well they play the Patriots receivers on Sunday night. They were strong. They did a good job. San Diego game planned well. San Diego game planned very well. And the Patriots game planned poorly. I think that's putting it mildly. Oh, here we go. Aha. Sorry that I forgot to sign the email. My name is Claude. I live in Kenner, Louisiana. Claude, that was an excellent, excellent email. Kenner, Louisiana. Where's Kenner? I'll have to go look for it on the map. But thank you for listening, and thank you for emailing, and I think you're dead spot on in terms of your analysis from Sunday night. Absolutely best email I've read in some time. Good stuff. Still time for you to share your thoughts as well on a Nitpick Tuesday here inside the playbook, webradio@patriots.com. Couple of things for you to nitpick on. Well, a bunch of things for you to nitpick on, but pick the one that really sticks in your craw from Sunday night. The one area of the game that you're just scratching your head about, you can't understand why it turned out that way. So give me your best nitpick from Sunday night. And with the NFL trading deadline coming up in a little less than an hour from now, if there was one player that you think could help this team right now that you could go out and just cherry pick from another team, who would it be and why? Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. We'll get a timeout in here. We'll continue and begin to start turning toward the Denver Broncos coming up inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or over to participate. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst! Are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you jump. Just can't wait for Sunday.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... here's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hour number two of Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio, and some breaking news in the National Football League as we speak. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has suspended Cowboy quarterback Adam Jones indefinitely. Yeah, indefinitely, without pay, for a minimum of 4 games. For violating the league's personal conduct policy, Jones is going to miss at least the next 4 games. according to NFL.com. Oh, you went and downloaded this stuff just for this, didn't you? Just for this story. That's good. It says, Goodell will determine the final length of the suspension following the Cowboys' Week 11 game against Washington on November 16, and the decision on whether he can return to play will be based on his strict compliance with his NFL and Cowboys treatment plans, as well as on evaluations of his progress to be provided to Goodell by clinical experts retained by the NFL. Apparently, it all stems from his alcohol-related altercation with his bodyguard from last week. So there you go. Big surprise, right? Pac-Man Jones is suspended. All right, let's turn our attentions now to the Denver Broncos, because there's certainly no reason to dwell anymore on what happened Sunday night in San Diego. Mark Johnson covers the Broncos for KOA in Denver and joined us here inside the playbook. Mark, how are you?
Doing real well, and any time you can work Pac-Man sound effects into a show, man, I'm all for it.
Why not? Kind of brings back old memories, doesn't it?
It does, back in high school, you bet.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm going to guess here that both teams would kind of like to forget what they did the last time out, although at least there seemed to be somewhat of a game at Mile High.
Well, it was, but I got to be honest with you, John. Over the last few weeks, when you watch this team, you know, there were some concerns going into the season. What was this team going to be like defensively? They were trying to plug some holes from a year ago in that regard, where they had – you know, in many statistical categories, one of the, you know, bottom 5 to 8 defenses in the NFL. It looked early like maybe that was the case, although nobody was paying attention because the offense was putting up such great numbers. Now, really, in the last three games, the concerns we have before the season are becoming a reality, because there are some obvious liabilities in this Denver Broncos defense right now. And so it's going to be interesting to see what they're able to do with these issues over the next few weeks.
Well, I was just going to say, I think to the outsiders and those that haven't seen a lot of Denver this far this year, the overall impression is a lot of O and not much D. Is that an accurate overstatement?
I think to some degree there's some truth in that. However, with that being said, we're also talking about an offensive unit that for three consecutive weeks has not scored 20 points now.
Okay.
There are some weapons there. Now, the issue this past week, you can write some of it off to the fact that Tony Scheffler was out, Eddie Royal was out with an injury, Brandon Stokley went down middle of the second quarter, and so he was not in the offensive arsenal either. And so it became Michael Pittman running the football and then Jay Cutler locking in on Brandon Marshall. And after a while, you know, any defense can figure that out. You got to just shut down Brandon Marshall. There's no one else to throw to out there. And so it became a very one-dimensional offense in many respects. And so even the last 3 weeks, offensively, this team has not been very sharp. Really, if you break down the numbers with what Denver has done now, six games this season, their record doesn't make sense. They're -5 turnover in most of the defensive categories. Once this year, they're in the bottom 5 or 6 positions in the National Football League. The offense has struggled. But yet here they are 4-2 leading the AFC West. And so their record really does contradict the numbers that are on paper.
Yeah, Broncos lost 24-17 to Jacksonville on Sunday. But before that, they scored 16 points, but in a win against Tampa, and then scored only 19 points in a loss at Arrowhead Stadium at Kansas City that got the Chiefs off the schneid. And then before that, it was 41, 39, and 34, respectively, in the first 3 weeks. So what was the difference? What has been the major difference in the drop-off, do you think?
Well, I think the first few games, and again, they came out of the chute, you know, those first three games, and you mentioned the point totals they put up. I mean, people thought that John Elway was playing again. They looked phenomenal. Cutler was hitting everybody. He was not missing anybody out there. They weren't running the ball terribly effective. Brandon Marshall at times looked like Superman playing. In a league full of elite athletes, he simply looked better than everybody out there. I mean, they couldn't tackle him after he caught the ball. He was making spectacular catches. In the last three games or four games now, they've started turning the football over. As I mentioned, they're -5 in the season. That's become an issue. Cutler hasn't been as sharp. I think defensive had really decided, and Gunther Cunningham probably gets credit for this in that Kansas City game, just drop those safeties deep, play at Tampa 2 against them, make them drop the ball in front of you, everything short, and then just be a sound tackling defense. And essentially that's been the game plan against the Broncos the last few weeks, because they have not had the big play. They have turned the ball over too many times. Cutler begins to press a little bit. And this has not been, this last game now notwithstanding, with Michael Pittman going over 100 yards, it has not been a team that's been able to run the football. Early on, we kind of joked about it. They were passing to set up the run, and the run certainly has not picked up this season. So, I think there's some talent on the offensive side, albeit injured right now. So I think you're okay there. But it's kind of team, as you look at it, with that defense, they have to go out and outscore teams on a week-to-week basis. And in the NFL, you're not going to hang 30 points on the board every single week. We all know that. So those have been some of the issues they've dealt with here recently.
Yeah, they're dealing with a lot of issues that I think the Patriots are also dealing with, in addition to the fact that, you know, we've got some people, you know, having to now play in key positions that just frankly aren't used to playing those positions, not the least of which would be quarterback in New England. So there are some similarities there. Let me just ask you in a general sense, Mark, what are your impressions overall of the league this year? And are you also of the opinion, like so many seem to be, who cover the NFL on a regular basis, that there just doesn't seem to be a great or even a really good football team at this stage of the season? And why do you think that is?
Well, that's a good question. It was one of the TV shows I do in town here. We were talking about that very topic this morning, and I said, right now, and we saw the Giants go down last night to the Cleveland Browns, there is no best team in the NFL right now, I don't think. And
right.
You know, that might not make total sense, but I think you get my drift. I think there's no great team out there right now. You know, before the season, it was, I would have put my paycheck down, okay, the AFC, San Diego, New England, Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Locks to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
We all thought that.
Right.
You know, and the NFC has got, probably the, I know the Giants won the Super Bowl last year, but I don't know if they're going to catch lightning in a bottle twice, but I think Dallas is pretty good. Well, now you look at it, boy, the Giants have been outstanding. Washington's been outstanding. You've got teams leading divisions that just don't make sense in some regards. I mean, the Buffalo Bills have been very good. Tennessee Titans right now may be the best team in football. I don't know. Their defense certainly has been outstanding. It's just become, the whole parity thing in the NFL, which I know the league loves, because every market then has got an opportunity to cheer for the team and got an opportunity to make the playoffs. It is as even maybe as we've seen it maybe ever in the NFL. And it certainly is entertaining, because any given week you don't know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, it certainly adds to the surprise. It certainly adds to the suspense. I think it keeps everybody, somewhat, into what is going on. But at the same time, I think we've seen some good football and seen some really bad football. And I don't know how much of the game Sunday night you caught against San Diego, but on New England's side, there was just some flat out bad football that didn't even need to see that. I mean, it didn't have to be that way. It seemed like there were easily correctable things that just weren't correctable. And I don't know if it's just the pressure. I don't know if it's because we get a lack of depth. If there's an inordinate amount of injuries, and based on everything that I've read, I don't think that we're that much ahead of the pace. In fact, I think we're probably right on the pace that we were, what was it, a couple of years ago, that we seemed to be going through a lot of bad injuries. So I don't think that's the problem. I'm having a hard time putting my finger on just one or two things, and maybe I just answered my own question, that it's a lot of different things. What do you think?
I think that's maybe the case, and I like to spend the time when we talk, whatever league it is, and here we're talking about the NFL, you talk parity.
Yeah.
Sometimes that can be a synonymous with mediocrity, and I don't know if that's the case, but when all teams seem to be on the same level, rarely are they all very good teams on the same level. It seems most of the time what you see is the top kind of upper crust kind of come back towards the middle a little bit. I think that's what we've seen this year, because even when you start looking at the teams that are supposed to be the good teams right now, like I mentioned, Tennessee is obviously undefeated at this point. The Giants have got their one loss. Washington has played well. San Diego seems to be finding its offense a little bit. Obviously, New England fans know that. Indianapolis seems to be finding their offense. Buffalo, but no matter who you talk about, John, they've all got liabilities and warts. I mean, there's no team you look at, like the Patriots here in recent times, or when the Broncos were rocking and rolling, we said, boy, there is not really weakness on that team. You can't say that about anybody. We thought maybe Dallas might be that team, but now they've had their injuries. You're talking about Pac-Man, Romo's down.
Right.
They've had other guys. They've had other guys that have gotten hurt. And so I don't know that there's a team out there right now that you can say from top to bottom, boy, they don't have any weaknesses. I think everyone's got their warts, and I think as this year goes on, it's going to become just a situation where who can overcome their liabilities better than the other guy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. Mark Johnson, who covers the Broncos for KOA Radio in Denver, joining us here inside the playbook. All right, so let's deal a little bit more specifically with the Broncos, simply because here's an opportunity, I think, for both teams. Denver's getting ready to put out one last big effort before they finally get their bye week. The Patriots have gone there. The Patriots need to do something, because whatever they did last week certainly didn't work, and some will undoubtedly blame it on the fact that they spent 2 weeks out west. I don't happen to think that really was a factor, although the proof has got to be in the pudding, I suppose. So they're going to be looking to get back on track here. I have read comments from fans, a couple of columnists, that the Broncos kind of felt like maybe they were more at fault for losing against Jacksonville than it was Jacksonville actually going out and winning the game. Number one, do you agree with that? Number two, if so, how do they repair that?
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's typical of fans to say that. I was a bit surprised. I saw some of the columnists here in the Mile High City writing that similar thing, and I didn't buy that. When you watch that game, I thought Jacksonville came out, and this is a term that Mike Shanahan used last week in regards to the 07 matchup. He said Jacksonville manhandled us. That was his term. I'd say there were certainly shades of that again this second meeting here in 2008 now. They were the more physical team. They made the hits. They made the plays. Brandon Marshall fumbles the football. Well, listen, he had it stripped, and Drayton Florence picks it up and runs it back, 25 yards to give him decent field position. And so, there was a lot of plays being made, I thought, by Jacksonville. I think that's a bit short-sighted to say that Denver lost that football game. Any team, when you lose a game, I'm sure New England this week could spin the same thing and say, oh, we lost that game against San Diego. Well, San Diego went out and beat the Patriots. The Jacksonville Jaguars went out and beat the Broncos on Sunday. I don't buy that. There were a couple of bad calls. The other thing, John, that really has kind of rung my bell here the last couple of days is, there was a couple of questionable calls late in the game that went in favor of Jacksonville, and that's kind of been the big outcry here in Denver the last couple of days. I'm like, wait a second. A team that has got a victory this season because of Hockley's mistake and a couple of other issues that were calls have gone Denver's way. This is a team that should not be crying and saying, hey, that was a bad call that went against us, because, as we all know, those things kind of even out. And so you haven't heard that from Mike Shanahan, but you've heard it from certainly a lot of the columnists and radio talk show hosts. But, yeah, I don't buy into that. Jacksonville beat Denver this past week, and I didn't see Denver losing that game.
Yeah, I was about to say that all things being equal, and that's actually how I kind of opened up today, Mark, to be honest with you. I said, you know what, I think this is just nature kind of evening things out here, because we've been very fortunate here, in the not too far distant past, and sometimes things just aren't going to go your way. It can't go your way all the time.
No, and what I got a kick out of this week. There was a before the pass interference call on the Broncos of Marlon McCree. The series beforehand, there was one that should have been called. The replays clearly showed those pass interference, and it wasn't called. And you're right. And Mike Shanahan has said it this week. He's been the one guy that stepped out and was not complaining about this. Said, there are going to be five or six calls every single game that could go one way or the other and affect the game. And maybe sometimes they don't go your way, sometimes they go the other direction. He said, you can't complain about those, because there are always opportunities to win football games or make plays to win football games throughout the course of a season or 16 games. And so he was the one guy that I thought kind of stepped up and put some common sense in this conversation. But fans will be fans, and columnists will be columnists.
Yeah. By the way, about Shanahan, I loved when he stepped up and took a little veiled shot at Al Davis. I have to admit, I got a nice long chuckle out of that one, just because of the whole thing that's going on in Oakland, the fact that he obviously coached there, and that's the one thing that I've actually always liked about Shanahan, and he's taken his slumps like every head coach does eventually anyway. But I will say this, he's been fairly consistent, and it's pretty hard to argue overall with his end result.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And by the way, in regards to Al Davis and the Raiders, there's no love lost between Mike Shanahan and Al Davis.
No.
And Mike, when he gets an opportunity, he'll throw a barb that direction. There's no doubt about that. But, you and I have both been around a lot of coaches, college and pros, and all the different sports. One thing you appreciate about Mike Shanahan, now Mike Shanahan's in control. Make no mistake, much like your guy out there in New England.
Yep.
He is in control of the franchise. He's the guy making the decisions. But with that being said, he's got all the marbles on his side, but he also is a guy, Ben, when things don't go bad, steps up and takes the brunt of that responsibility as well. So I appreciate Mike Shanahan in that regard. He's forthright. Now, he's not always flowing with information for all of us, and we well understand that, but he's a guy that really steps up in that old line about the buck stopping here. Mike approaches us that way, and so you can appreciate that.
Sure, absolutely. Mark, the focal point of this football team obviously has to be start with Jay Cutler, because of the position that he plays. And I know that there are some fans out here that don't know a lot about Denver other than the fact that, I heard the other day that Jay Cutler called himself a better quarterback than John Elway. Can you explain what all that was about?
Well, he didn't actually say that. I know that's kind of the way it's come out. What happened was there was a conversation, and he said it very tongue-in-cheek, about somebody would ask him, who's got the stronger arm, you at this age, at the age of 25, or John Elway when he was in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jay said you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek and with a sly grin on his face, there's no doubt I've got a stronger arm than John did. Now, when Elway was asked about it, he actually said, you know what, I think maybe at that age he probably does have a stronger arm than I had, you know, is what Elway's response was. And so it was kind of a good joke back and forth between those two. Now, he might be right. You know, John would have a better assessment of that than I would, but John seemed to think very seriously that Cutler's arm was stronger than what John's was. And John had a pretty darn good arm, obviously. Now, I don't think at this point that Cutler's game is better than what John Elway's was. He's not a better quarterback than what John Elway was at the same age. And I would say that Jay Cutler's got more weapons to deal with at the age of 25 than probably John Elway did. So it was interesting the way that story kind of came out and took on a life of its own. But, no, the conversation was about who had the stronger arm at the age of 25, 20, 26 years old. It was not about the overall quarterback. Now, that being said, I do think that Jay Cutler is going to be a very, very all-pro caliber quarterback and may lead the Broncos, you know, to a Super Bowl at some point in his career because he had that kind of game. John, the one thing we didn't know about Jay Cutler, and I was skeptical of, if he had that it factor that the Elways, the Favres, the Bradys, those kind of guys have, and I wasn't sure we saw it in his first couple of seasons, albeit he was only a full-time starter a year ago. The one thing you see in him, though, he's got that swagger, that leadership that kind of rallies guys, the ability to make that play you don't think a guy can make. And so I think there's a very bright future. They've been waiting for somebody to replace number 7 here in Denver for a long time. It appears right now. Well, you know, the time will tell. But it appears right now they've got the guy that could be around here and be a high-level quarterback for a long time in the National Football League.
The focal point, I think, defensively for a lot of people has to be Champ Bailey. And I guess from what I can gather here, from based on what I've read of the Broncos, is that teams are kind of going away from him now. Is that just respect for Champ Bailey? Or are they looking at another area in this team thinking it's susceptible and we can win this way?
Well, I think there's probably a little bit of both there. I mean, Dre Bly has had success in the NFL and at the other corner. However, Champ is still playing at such a high level, and he's only got one pick this season. He hasn't had many chances over there, and so they are going away from him, and they're picking on Dre Bly on the other side. And Bly has given up some big plays this season, so I think it's a little bit of both. It's you know, Champ Bailey is one of the top cover corners of the National Football League, and we're seeing teams make plays on the other side over there, so let's stay away from Champ and go after Dre Bly. And, you know, you've got a couple of safeties out there that, you know, had some issues this season as well. They have not defensed the pass as well as they should. I think they're like 26th or 27th or something like that in the NFL against the pass this season. So it's number one, great respect for Champ Bailey, and number two, maybe not as much respect as they could have for the other side of that defense and the other guys in the secondary.
I guess a good question then might be how do the Broncos try to style their defense to perhaps even force teams to have to look at Bailey a little bit more?
Well, they're working on cloning Champ Bailey, but so far that hasn't worked.
I like that one. Hey, listen, we'd all like to be able to do that. In fact, you know, could we get on the waiting list for a Champ Bailey clone? Because, frankly, the Patriots could use one.
The first thing they tried was to go and get his brother Boss, you know, but and that hasn't quite worked out in the same way. But now I think what you're seeing, you're starting to see, you know, them allowing those safeties, Bob Slowick and the defensive side, allowing those safeties to, you know, cheat a little bit over towards the Bly side to help him out a little bit, putting a bit more pressure on Champ Bailey. But even that hasn't worked to this point because that defense right now, there's more issues there than just pass defense and what Dre Bly has done or has not done on the other side. You know, they haven't been able to stop the run. Teams have run against them. Teams have given up points and giving up passing yards. It's not been a good year defensively, once again, for the Broncos. And, you know, during Mike Shanahan's career here, when they've had success, 97, 98, when they win those Super Bowls, they had that high power defense, and their defense was just good.
Right.
The problem is you can't have a defense ranked in the bottom five. They've got to be in that, you know, 12, 14, 15, 18 range, somewhere in the middle in there. And then you can play that style of football. But when you get one of the top five offenses, one of the bottom five defenses, you cannot score, you know, everybody every single week. And that's been the big issue.
Yeah, I think that's actually pretty much dead on. Now, have you been able to, and I'm sure you guys have probably talked about it a lot, but have you been able to put your finger on one or two things, you know, that this defense, the Broncos defense, needs to do in order to be a better defensive unit? Or is the talent just not there?
Well, that's kind of how I see it. I don't think they've got enough playmakers on that side. You've got Champ Bailey, obviously. DJ Williams is an all-pro level guy. You know, I think he'll be there at some point. And so he's making plays out there. Outside of that, they've got guys out there. And you know, Nate Webster is a fine linebacker, and Boss Bailey is very athletic, and he's a fine linebacker. And Marlon McCray, at this point in his career, is a fine safety back there. But you kind of get my drift. You look at the rest of them and say, well, those are just good guys, and you got to have those guys, but you got to have more playmakers out there. If they've got five or six playmakers in that side of the football that are out there making those big plays at home games, that kind of thing, then I think you're fine. But right now they don't have enough of those kind of guys. They've got two of them, but outside of that, it's a bunch of pedestrian kind of guys out there, and I think that's been much of the issue.
All right. How's this team, and I realize it's early and probably don't practice till tomorrow like we don't, but health-wise, where does this team stack up right now?
Well, again, on the offensive side, Tony Scheffler, we're probably not going to see him at your guys' place on Monday night. He's still got the groin issue. He's become one of the main targets offensively, throwing from his tight end position for Jay Cutler. Probably not going to see him. We're waiting for word by tomorrow on Brandon Stokely. He got the concussion this past week against Jacksonville. He's been a guy lining up in a slot. It's really seen his productivity pick up here the last few weeks. Cutler's really been looking for him, so it's kind of a wait and see with him. Eddie Royal, we suspect that he'll be back on Monday night. He's got a bone bruise and then a slight sprain in his ankle and foot. We expect him to be back. He was a game-time decision this past week, so we think he'll be back out there. Those have been the three main guys on the offensive side that they've got to be concerned about. So when Cutler's got his full array of talent out there offensively, then he has the ability to throw it around. They become much tougher to stop. And again, we saw some of the numbers early in the season. But that's been a huge issue. Defensively, you know, it's been interesting. Both Jarvis Moss and Tim Crowder, two first-round draft picks from a couple of years ago, have been inactive almost every game. Now, they both were active this past week, but as I talk about them trying to get a pass rush on and getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks, they haven't been able to do it. And so far, the two of their top picks 2 years ago appear to be a bust at this point in time because they're not getting much action. When they are out there, they've been ineffective so far. So, you know, those guys aren't injured, but they might as well be because they have not been a factor this season at all.
Interesting. All right, before then we kind of get to your thoughts then on Monday night, I have to give at least a little bit of a shout-out to a former Longhorn who has had himself a pretty good start to his pro career in Selvin Young. Who, you know, a lot of ways, and I'm not trying to, you know, compare him to, you know, a guy like Priest Holmes, but, you know, he was an undrafted running back coming out of Texas, and Selvin's been a fairly integral part of what you guys have tried to do on offense.
He really has been. There was a guy that I forgot to mention. You know, he didn't play this past week either because he was dinged up a little bit, but expect to see him back on Monday night. Now, Pittman probably is going to get the start. He's a very physical guy. Your fans obviously know about him,
right?
That the Broncos picked up this past offseason. He's kind of earned that position, so I expect to see him starting. But Selvin Young has been a nice, I think, compliment to that team. Now, he had his sights set on being the number one guy, getting 20, 25 carries a game. I don't see him that way. In fact, his first year here, Mike Shanahan talked about Selvin Young in that regard because they haven't had that guy. You know, they haven't had that one guy you really rely upon now for a few years, really since Clinton Portis, you know, was traded for Champ Bailey. That's probably the last guy they had we really count on being back there game in and game out and every snap and every down. But he wanted to be that guy. I don't think it's ever going to happen for him. He's more of a third, you know, down kind of guy.
Yeah.
But he has been a nice compliment on the offensive side, you know, for the Broncos. He can catch the ball in the backfield. He's got good speed. He runs hard. You know, not terribly big, and so that's why they bring in a guy like, you know, Travis Henry previous and now Michael Pittman to kind of be more the battering ram, if you will. And so, but, yeah, he has done a nice job. And, you know, Mike Shanahan's made a career out of picking up guys sometimes, and, you know, these free agent running backs and you know, making them 1,000-yard rushers. You can go back in the course of the last few years and you look at the list of 1,000-yard rushers the Broncos have had, and you think, who is that guy and where did he come from?
Yeah.
But Mike has been able to do that.
Right. All right, what do you think then about Monday? I realize it seems like it's a long, long way away, and in reality it is. But the fact remains is that Denver undoubtedly would love to be able to go into their off week on an uptick. They're 4-2. They continue to you know, hold a one-game lead over San Diego in the West and want to try to keep as much distance between them and the Chargers as possible. And the Patriots obviously are going to have to scratch and claw a little bit, I think, on Monday.
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, it's an interesting game from the standpoint that both of these teams have got plenty of warts and plenty of liabilities. And you know, for the Broncos, Broncos have got to start taking care of the football. They just simply have not done that here in recent weeks. So they have thrown the ball around. They put the ball on the ground too many times. They've got to establish a running game at least a little bit. I know they did some with Michael Pittman this past week, but they got to continue to do that. And defensively, they've got to stop giving up the big plays. We saw Maurice Jones-Drew the other day take one, you know, the distance. So they've got to stop giving up the big plays and be a better tackling team. And if they do some of those things against New England, you know, they might have some success there. And I know in that battle, and that's been much talked about this week, you know, early on, but, you know, Mike Shanahan against Bill Belichick and some of the success he's had there, despite the fact the Patriots have been the dominant franchise for the last, what, 5-6 years in the National Football League. But if they do some of those things, I mean, you know, they've got a good chance to go in there and get that before the bye week. If not, if they continue to play like they have been, I'm going to be hard-pressed to say they're going to come out of there with a win.
Mark, I really appreciate the visit this afternoon. It's greatly appreciated. Great to speak with you again. Will you be traveling this way?
I am not this week. I got to stay back here, so I won't be with the team.
Somebody's got to hold down the fort, right?
That's right.
Well, it's good to talk to you. I'll hope to do it again soon. Thank you.
John, always good to talk to you. Bye.
You bet. Thanks. It's Mark Johnson, again, who's the sports director at KOA Radio, which is the station of record for the Denver Broncos in Denver, Colorado, visiting with us here inside the playbook. And with that, we also bring in Brian Lowe, voice of record for Patriots Today.
You betcha, John. How you doing?
B. Lowe, how are you?
Great, great, great. Yourself?
What are your thoughts already on Denver for I mean, Monday night? It seems like it's, you know, ages away, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is. A Monday night game, difference between a Sunday afternoon and Monday night game is pretty big. But that's a team that can score points. Wow. Brandon Marshall is, I mean, the Jay Cutler to Brandon Marshall tandem is emerging as one of the best.
Yeah,
in the league.
I think that's, yeah, right.
And based on what we saw out of the Chargers passing game the other day, you shudder to think what they might be able to do against the Patriots secondary the way they've been right now. And, you know, I think this is also an opportunity, even though, the Patriots offense was pretty good against San Francisco, but, you know, not great the other day and not great against Miami the week before that. This could be an opportunity for them at home. They haven't been home in a month, at home against a fairly low rated defense to start to make things happen.
Yeah.
And maybe when you combine that with a game against St. Louis the following week, maybe get into a rhythm for the first time this year. They really haven't had a good stretch. They've had a couple of decent games, and even those games, there were still some warts. I think this might be an opportunity for them to offensively to make some things happen. But you've got to worry. Boy, do you have to worry about the Patriots defense, especially going
against
this offense.
You got to worry about a lot of things.
Really,
I've spent most of the program talking about here. Like Matt Cassel are the least of your worries. He actually, comparatively speaking, was good compared to a lot of the other guys on Sunday night. Let's face it, it was bad. I just, you know, I can't imagine how difficult the trip home must have been.
Yeah, I'm sure it was rough, for them. I mean, a lot of times when you make a cross-country trip, win or lose, it's just you're beat anyways, and it's not like you're overjoyed maybe in the locker room. That in the locker room is really when you can tell whether a team won or lost, not really the plane ride. In the locker room, the emotions are still there, the adrenaline is still there. By the time they get on the plane, I think win or lose, it's just kind of, you know, let's get some rest and let's get home. But you know, there really wasn't a portion of the game or an element of the team that you took away from that, maybe other than Chris Hansen, and you say, you know what, I'm not worried about that position or that element of the team. I mean, there really wasn't. And you know, it was against a San Diego team that is also sort of a schizophrenic team themselves. I mean, what do you make of them?
I look at San Diego as being considerably better than 2-3 going in, because they do lose those two games that were both in the last minute. And I made this statement last week, Brian, and I said it earlier today, that, you know, this team was a 4-1 team. And they even had a legitimate, you know, claim to 5-0 because they lost that Miami game 17-10.
Right.
So, I mean, that team is probably a heck of a lot better than a 2-3 record would indicate going in, even with their own set of injury problems. I mean, a less than healthy LT, a less than healthy Antonio Gates, no Sean Merriman. I mean,
Chris Chambers
as well. Yeah. I was real impressed with San Diego. I thought they played very well.
And game plan wise, I mean, you know, go right after what, you know, they pinpointed the Patriots secondary
as the secondary, and then went after it on play one.
And you know what? They admitted as much after the game. And you know what? That was what they knew they could exploit. They figured they could exploit and also don't underestimate the size advantage as well. It wasn't just that they felt that they could exploit weak cornerbacks. They have a size advantage. They had an increasingly confident quarterback. And you know, Vincent Jackson. We don't mention Brandon Marshall. Vincent Jackson is emerging as a pretty solid.
We talked a little bit about Vincent last week, that he would be a key to Sunday night's game. Boy, was he a key!
So you go after you go down the field, and you go after Delta O'Neal early. It works. Why not keep it up? I mean, they had, you know, they had 48, 49, and 50-something yard pass plays in that game, and plenty of others that were 10 yards or more. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, the cornerbacks were no match for them. Over the middle, not enough bite in the defense for the Patriots.
And we didn't have one third down conversion over 4 yards. Over 4 yards. Not one third down conversion.
And they didn't – and And the Patriots' defense didn't touch Phillip Rivers, which is a problem as well. And that's been a recurring problem, is getting after the opposing quarterback. That's been a problem. And, you know, this Patriots team, when they're behind, they're not going to do much. There's no evidence yet that they're going to be able to do much when they're playing behind, from behind. I mean, against San Francisco, they were down a bit. I think it was just 7-0 and 14-7. But, you know, getting down 17-3 at halftime, and they were completely deflated by that drive at the beginning of the second half.
No doubt. That ended the game right
there.
Fire
up the plane right there. That ended the game right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even if they not getting into the end zone there was a killer. But even then, you say, okay, the Chargers have the ball at the 1 yard line. They've got to go 99 yards.
Right.
Here's an opportunity for the defense to hold them and maybe
make
the Patriots,
a stand and then get field position and try it again.
And if you get decent field position and you're down by two touchdowns, hey, it's certainly still a game.
Right.
But not getting in there and allowing them to quickly get 99 yards, you know, that ended the game right there. Rodney Harrison said as much. Richard Seymour said as much. They knew it at that point. There wasn't going to be much left.
And I guess the other thing that bothers me a little bit is the fact that, you know, this team seems to know where the problem areas are, and yet they can't do anything about it.
Well, it's a question of, do they have the horses? I mean, the guy, you know, who
well,
you got?
You
I mean,
have
the,
to rely on other people. You have to rely on other people to do this. Yeah, the trade deadline
is
20 minutes.
Is moments away. And yeah. Belichick said earlier today, there's a less than 1% chance
that they do anything.
So that's not going to be a solution, most likely.
Right.
You know, every now and then you can get a guy off the scrap heap later on. I mean, is Ty Law a solution? I say no. I don't think he's going to be much better, especially a guy who, you know, he's not known necessarily for being in great shape. Would he be able to, could they sign him and he comes in and is a solution at cornerback? I personally don't think so. I mean, where is the help? I don't know.
It certainly couldn't be much worse than Delta O'Neal and what we saw the other night. My equation for that is, let's just let the young guys play.
You know, Terrence Wheatley got by far his most playing time of the season and didn't show much. But, you know, you're a rookie cornerback coming in
go.
Against a high-profile offense.
Let him go.
You know, give him a chance.
Because you're not going to get any better than that from O'Neal. There's no point in playing the guy.
Right, exactly. And you wonder if there's shades of, you know, when they had Dwayne Starks back in 2005 and they cut him in midseason.
Right.
Now, the difference between Starks and O'Neal is O'Neal came in on September 1st. When a guy comes in on September 1st, you've got to lower your expectations because, you know, a team just cut him and all that. Dwayne Starks was a guy who was probably the most high-profile acquisition they made that offseason. You know, they trade for him right after the Super Bowl. It was a big deal, and he was such an utter disappointment. With O'Neal, it's almost like, well, what could the expectation level have really been with this guy when he comes in less than a week before the season starts? So, you know, wouldn't be stunned if he doesn't last for too long. But if he doesn't last, their entire depth at cornerback is Ellis Hobbs, Lewis Sanders, and the two rookies, Will Hyde and Wheatley. And you know what? That's not great quality. It's not great depth. Not great experience. I mean, that you're struggling right there if you don't retain Delta O'Neal.
Well, you know, I think if that's what you're going to get by playing someone like O'Neal, then you ought to have the young guys realize that you're going to get burnt from time to time, mm-hmm. And then try to reevaluate and maybe try to beef up that position in the offseason again, because now you've certainly identified need. But the thing that troubles me the most is this was a position that was identified as a need in the offseason, which is why you go out and you draft Wheatley and Will Hite, and you still have this, you know, as a potential trouble spot. Plus, I think we realize that we still got work to do within the linebacking core.
Yes, they do. And the interesting thing there is, you know, the problems at linebacker aren't injury related. I mean, the guy that's a position where when you look at it on paper, they've got decent starters and they've got decent depth. I mean, they've got, you know, they've got a few guys who are contributing, and the entire front seven, in fact. I mean, that's where you figured the strength should be,
and it's just not
really there. They haven't been
out that way.
There haven't been the impact plays that you expect and that you really need.
Todd sends an email. He says, "Who played better last year, Seau or Teddy? So why is Seau chilling on the left coast and Teddy stinking up our D?"
Well, I can tell you for sure. Well, you know, we actually caught up with Seau on Sunday at
the
restaurant, and we'll actually have an interview with him on the Patriots today.
How
today.
Great is
if
that?
If I could do an early plug, I mean, you
please
always
do.
You're always good enough to ask me what's on the show towards the end, but we have a little one-on-one with Seau, and for sure, the reason why he wasn't around during training camp and up to this point is he was hurt. He had surgery,
right.
And he really said that he just now is getting is healthy enough to play. I wouldn't rule that out. And here's the thing. Even if Seau was healthy, if you brought him in training camp, to think that you could get another 19 healthy games out of him is unrealistic. This is a guy who, before he came here in 06, had injury – I'm sorry, no, in yeah, in 06, he had injury problems with Miami. He's getting up there, obviously. He can still play. I think he'd be a solid addition. I don't know if he is – you know, the difference maker in this team being 500 or going to the Super Bowl. But I'll tell you what, you get the sense that he wants to play. You get the sense that he can still bring it. I don't, you know, he jokes about surfing all the time, and I'm not doubting that. But I think he's, you know, I think he has football still in his mind, and I think he's probably preparing for that. He said, I don't expect a phone call anytime soon, but he's ready if that phone call comes. So, you know, who would he replace? What role would he play? Hard to tell. I mean, if they signed him right now, you still figure before he plays a game, it'll be November probably. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. Even if you sign him right now, so you got to temper your expectations. But, hey, I don't think that's a guy you can rule out. I don't think it's a guy you can rule out.
Wow. All right. See, a little breaking news here.
Sure, a little
bit. Patriots playbook,
a little bit.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so by
the way,
look for that on Patriots today, a little bit later on today, right?
Exactly. And by the way, if he doesn't come back and play football, he has a dynamite restaurant to watch games in.
Yeah?
I'm telling you.
What makes it so good? Tell us about it.
Tell us about it. Well, first of all, I've been there twice now. I was there when we were back there in the playoffs a couple years ago, and he is heavily involved. He's there all the time. He's there. He's greeting fans. It's a place that has tons of memorabilia.
Cool.
Yeah, he's got lots of memorabilia of his own and other players, great TVs and a really good menu. I just get the sense, and, you know, I've been in sports bars before and all that. This isn't just one of those places where, you know, an athlete's name is on the restaurant, and that's just about it. Great atmosphere there. Huge TVs and I'm not on the payroll here or anything. This isn't an advertisement, but that's a pretty cool place. And the fact that he seems to be around a lot, as long as he's not, you know, in the midst of playing football, it's a pretty cool place.
Excellent.
Pretty cool.
All right.
And he got his ring. He got his AFC Championship ring from Robert Kraft on Sunday.
So they presented it to him in person.
They did. Yeah. Yeah. So that was a neat little ceremony. And, you know, the backdrop of that is always, hey, we wish it could have been a bigger ring. We wish it could have meant more. But I you could tell he was pretty touched by just being a part of what last year, you know, really was and getting this ring. So.
I think there are a lot of fans that certainly respect what he's done for pro football and certainly respect what he's done in a short amount of time with the Patriots, but what he's done in pro football overall. And I think because they have respect for him and because this team might have a need for him, I think there are a lot of people that would love to see him give it one more whack.
And back to the original question from the emailer, who had a better year, Seau or Brewski, you know, it's close. I mean, I think it might well be Seau. It might well be Seau. But, you know, really, he did have surgery, and that's why he wasn't, that's why it wasn't really a, wow, why haven't they brought him in? Why haven't they brought him in? What are they waiting for? He wasn't healthy enough. And a guy like Seau, you know, if he's not healthy enough at the beginning of training camp, why wait? And he did say the Patriots would be the only team he'd come back to.
Well, that doesn't come as a shock, right?
No, no.
Jeffrey sends this one. He says, hi, I know there is a lot of problems on this team, but I did ignore Richard Seymour's comments when Brady first went down, but I do keep hearing the same comment over and over from announcers. ESPN's announcer brought it up on the sideline. Richard Seymour keeps saying that this team has always won with defense no matter who is under center. He did not win any rings with Bledsoe under center, and all the defensive problems were hidden by the offense last year. It really bothers me that he says that. They're soft in the middle on the offensive line and old at safety. We need to pick up some good cover corners. Lito Shepard is who I have in mind. Do you think the injury to Tank Williams was bigger than we think?
Well, now that's an interesting one, and names are escaping me, but they swung and missed at a few other corners, a few other defensive backs this offseason. Why I can't think of them right now, but they brought in some guys and they didn't last through training camp. Tank Williams is an interesting one because Fernando Bryant. Tank Williams is that's a very interesting point, and because of it was intriguing to think about the role he was going to play, one of those sort of hybrid linebacker safeties, and you know you figure for him a game like Sunday night against an Antonio Gates, that would have been a Tank Williams game. If Dallas Clark plays against Indianapolis, that would have been a Tank Williams game. He's a little younger and maybe faster than Rodney Harrison and all that, and he could have made an impact. It's a great point, and they definitely had some intriguing plans for Tank Williams. I think there's no doubt about it. So, you know, again, would the presence of Tank Williams on the field have limited what Ronnie Brown was able to do against Miami? Maybe a little bit. And maybe he would have had a better read on Anthony Fasano on that touchdown. You know, would it be a difference between winning and losing the games? Who knows? Hard to tell. But I just feel like both of the two losses that they've had have been bigger than any one player.
Yes.
I don't think you could say, well, if this player was healthy or if this player played better, I think it was bigger than that.
I would totally agree. By the way, one of the questions of the day that I had today was, with the trading deadline coming up here in another 10, 11 minutes, mm-hmm. if there was one player you could cherry pick from another team that would make the Patriots better right now, who would you go get? And a couple of people have both said Lito Shepard.
Well, that's an interesting one, and the other one that I've heard is the Oakland cornerback, Nnamdi Asamoah, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think he's in his franchise tag.
Is he?
He's a franchise tag guy right now.
Okay.
Which means that he's got a hefty salary this year. It's somewhere in the $10 million range, I believe.
Wow, big?
Is it that big? Or could he be one of those guys that this is his second year as a franchise tag, and so it gets increased? Whatever it is,
yeah.
He's under the franchise tag, so he's got a fairly hefty salary this year. I can't recall if he may have been a franchise tag guy and then signed a contract with Oakland. I can't remember, but obviously Oakland is a team that, you know, I don't think they're attached to really anyone. So he'd be an interesting one. He's a young emerging cornerback, sort of in that same class and stable as Asante Samuel. Cornerback is the position, and I think Shepard is a guy, and Asamoah is another guy. And like you said, I mean, when we're talking about these guys, the clock is ticking. And,
yeah.
And Belichick earlier today didn't seem too confident that they'd be doing anything, and rarely does any team, honestly. I mean, last year, remember, Chris Chambers was the big mm-hmm. impact trade, and that was a big impact trade.
Sure was.
Miami dumping him off to San Diego. Cornerback would be the position you look at if you could cherry pick someone. Those are a couple of the guys. Yeah.
Jack says, I've been one of the guys who has been backing up Matt Cassel. You can't blame him for everything. However, watching this game on Sunday night, maybe it was the camera angles, maybe my eyes have just been opened, but I'm starting to fall off the support Matt bandwagon. I watched as time after time he didn't see open receivers. Time after time he took a snap, quickly threw the ball away. Time after time he looked for a place for himself to run rather than find an open man. I'm not so sure that I saw it that way. I saw him holding on to the ball again a little bit longer than he should have, especially comparing him to Phillip Rivers. Rivers has a very quick release and knew exactly where his receivers were going to be. He anticipated very well, and the receivers knew where to go get the ball. The Patriots don't have that kind of chemistry yet between Cassel and the receiving corps.
There's no question, and I think it certainly there's a combination of the offensive line, receivers getting open, and Cassel's decision making. I put a little more on Cassel. I felt on some of these sacks and some of the decisions he made, and he's going to go through his lumps and bumps, and the question is, have we seen enough out of him to say, well, you know what, each of these situations where he hasn't done well is a situation he can learn from. Well, I don't know. I mean, the week after week where, the sacks are piling up and, Brady was sacked so few times last year and you got some of the similar personnel, you've got to wonder, is his decision-making improving? Is his ability to elude sacks improving? Haven't seen a ton of that yet, but, he's going to take his lumps. He's going to take his lumps, and in this particular case, I think it was more on him than the offensive line. But, in every case, it's different, Hard to tell right now, but he's got to do a better job with getting that ball off.
Jack also says, now look, I'm not so blind that I can't see that everyone is playing like garbage. They are, but the team takes its cues from the quarterback, and the quarterback has nothing to tell the team. He can't lead this team. He doesn't inspire them. He doesn't motivate them. I hate to say it because the D looks so bad right now, but the O-line didn't look very good. And Cassel, like it or not, has been thrown into a fire that he cannot manage. And I actually think that is a key phrase right there. Cassel has been thrown into a situation that may be unmanageable for him.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know if it's unmanageable. It's a tough one. I mean, it's a very tough situation for him to jump into. But I felt that in the two games where in the Kansas City game when he jumped right in and struggled very early but then got off the ground with the Randy Moss completion when he was buried in his end zone, and then against San Francisco when he completed that pass deep to Moss, is it too simplistic to say that trying to establish, get the ball into Moss's hands in the first series of the game? I feel like Matt Cassel's a different guy after they do that. And they tried it in this game. If you remember the play down the right sideline where Moss, it seemed like Moss sort of was trying to trick Quentin Jammer into thinking that the ball wasn't there yet because he kind of released his arms too late. And I just feel like, and it, maybe it's too simple, maybe not, I feel like if maybe they had completed that that pass and got into the end zone, that Castle's a bit of a different guy. He gets some adrenaline going. He gets, you know, he feels good about, hey, you know what? We've gotten Moss the ball. You know he's feeling a little bit of pressure.
Good point. Yeah, I like the point.
You know, game in, game out, he's feeling a little bit of pressure. Maybe he's hearing it from Castle, from Moss himself, or it's just the fans or whatever. You know he's feeling a little bit of pressure to get Moss involved and get him involved early, and it sort of takes a little bit of the pressure off him and takes some weight off him when he can find Moss with the ball. They tried it again. They tried it against San Francisco early, and they succeeded on that one time, and they went on and had a decent offensive day. Tried it this game, failed, struggled. I don't know. Maybe I like the game plan. I like the idea of finding him deep. And you know,
well, Moss didn't have the best day either. Moss let a couple of balls that he could have gotten, I think, kind of get through him.
And I'm not saying it's all on Castle to get Moss the ball. It's also on Moss to make sure he gets the ball. And it's been a 50-50 proposition, I guess, so far. And like I said earlier, against Denver and the struggles that they've had defensively, maybe it's another one of those opportunities to almost do what Phillip Rivers did the other day. First play of the game, find Moss deep. He gets double-teamed all the time. We know that. You see what Denver's playing. You try to get him the ball. Try it, and if it works, I feel like Castle is a different guy after that works in some of these games. And, you know, it's simple. It's too simple for me to sit here and say get Moss the ball early because defenses are thinking that too. But, you know, maybe that's one of the big keys for this team.
John says, well, here's what I observed. We were getting manhandled when we came out in the third, marched down the field, and couldn't score. Patriots did something I never expected. They quit. You could see it in their faces, their play, and obviously the results. It broke my heart to see this team give up. Okay, the nitpicks. Now let me say, none of these would have won the game, just things I noticed. Randy Moss's drop catch in the 10-yard line. He caught that ball, got it knocked away, and it bounced out of bounds. That should have been a catch and a fumble. Why did nobody challenge? Ellis Hobbs. I think it was Gates he was covering. Hobbs gets the beat on the ball, turns to catch it, and Gates wraps his arm around Hobbs' face, blinding him from the catch. No call, and it happened twice. I'm not sure I remember that one. The four attempts to get in the end zone. One play was an open Sammy Morris over the goal line. A Castle throw a rocket from 3 yards and too low. 3 yards. How did you throw that too low? It was the throw to Sammy Morris, who was open in the middle.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Plus, and I made this comment in the opening hour, Brian, that Jamal Williams pancaking Dan Copeland was one of the more embarrassing plays I think I've ever seen from an offensive lineman in a long time.
Yeah.
He was totally abused. It was the old duck the center call when you play, you know, flag football in your backyard with your big brother. You know, no DCing here, you know, and he got DC'd. That's exactly what happened. It totally blew the play up.
Yeah, one of the best defensive tackles in the game going up against, you know, one of the better centers, and we know who got the better end of that matchup, and that sort of epitomized
the whole game.
That did sort of epitomize the whole game. You're right, and it epitomized the you know, the intensity of the game, really. It kind of epitomized the intensity of the game and the momentum and all that, and boy, they got the better better of that matchup, no question.
And John says Castle either needs to figure out a way to lead the team or step out of the way. I'm not blaming him for everything, far from it. But he's the focal point, and it doesn't look as though anyone listens to him. I can't disagree with that. And I think the perfect example is, and you kind of alluded to it as well, but talking to the guys in the locker room after the game, because you were there and you talked to them, they all agreed that after that drive took place, the 98 yarders the other way, that team gave up. I don't know if this team gives up if somebody else is the focal point.
Yeah, and it is interesting, and I'm not going to sit here and say that the defensive players were throwing the offense under the bus, but they did say that, you know, not getting into the end zone there was a crusher. And you know, they're just being honest. That was true. That was a crusher, and it shouldn't affect the defense's performance, or it shouldn't affect the defense's effort, and I certainly don't think it did. I'm not sitting here and saying that it affected their effort, but the defensive players, some of the key guys on this team, did say that was the key sequence. Not getting into the end zone there was a crusher. I don't see how you could say otherwise, but that, you know, it is still a 17-3 game, and it's still early in the third quarter. It's no reason to give up on the game. I don't think they gave up on the game. I find that hard to believe, but you know, that they did say that that was a letdown. There was a letdown there at that point.
Well, the Patriots then will work this week, get back to work tomorrow here at Gillette Stadium, in fact, preparing for the Denver Broncos, which is Monday Night Football, mm-hmm. next Monday on ESPN, which we'll deal with in more detail tomorrow and Thursday here inside the playbook. But any quick thoughts about the matchup then with the Broncos?
No, I just think that, like I said, it's an opportunity. The Patriots defense better use that extra day that they have before Monday night, because they've got a tough test. And coming off the way they played the other day, I just think this is going to be a tough matchup for the cornerbacks yet again.
Yeah,
Eddie Royal is another guy who stepped up, and the Denver, as you were talking about earlier, the Denver running game, year in and year out, you might not know these guys, you might not have ever heard of some of these guys, but they produce. Jay Cutler's coming into his own, but on the other side of it, I really do think that there is an opportunity here for the Patriots and Castle to get into a rhythm, and I feel like if they can't do it against Denver and St. Louis in this next stretch, who are they going to do it against? And maybe then, when we talk 2 weeks from now, if they haven't gotten it done, it's time for some big changes. But it's got some shootout possibilities. It's funny, Monday Night Football, I feel like often there are just these wild shootouts and all that. And I think this could be one of them. I think the team hopes they get some good crowd support in this game. A Monday night or prime time. They haven't been home in a month. And it's an opportunity, I think, for them to get on track a little bit, because after this Denver-St. Louis stretch, you got Indy. You got another West Coast swing coming up after that. You get into some of these, mid-season AFC East games. I think they have a stretch after the Indy game where if it isn't
they haven't faced Buffalo.
Right, and if it isn't three in a row against AFC East teams, it's three out of four. They go, they host Buffalo, they host the Jets, they go to Miami, all in that month of November.
Right,
that's going to be the make or break stretch really for the entire division.
I agree.
These next two games are critical.
They can set the table. They can get this team on a roll. If it's going to get on a roll, now would be the time to start rolling.
At home against two teams that are beatable and that the offense can do some damage against.
And again tonight on Patriots Today,
we got some Seau stuff, some really good stuff. It was actually an interesting afternoon there at Seau's restaurant. So we hear from him, which is pretty good. We talk a little bit about Lawrence Maroney too, who's a guy that's been in the spotlight, not necessarily for the right reasons. So we talk about him and a few other items as well as we get set to start previewing this game as well.
All right, it's a beautiful thing. B-Lo, good to see you again.
Thanks,
buddy.
Good to see you, John.
You all recovered now from the
easily,
jet lag and everything
easily.
Else?
You know, it was almost good to have a jet lag and a red eye all kind of mixed into one.
Oh, nice.
You know what I mean? So you're going to be kind of screwed up body clock wise. So you might as well just get it all in there together. You know,
nice.
I think I'm good to go now.
All right, very good. We'll see you here on the ranch later this week.
You bet.
In the Hall is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio. We think. Oh, it's replay. When is it? Oh, that is that tomorrow? Oh, they can't make it today. So replay is next, okay? Ron Jaworski. Jaws is going to be with us tomorrow from Monday Night Football. 2Gender, you're the man. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. I know that everybody likes to give you trouble, but you are the man.
In my opinion, the jury's still out. No, I'm just kidding. Dan's the best. Dan is the best.
Yeah, there you go. 2Gender. So Ron Jaworski will be inside the playbook with you tomorrow if, of course, you are here. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel.